Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we are qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of fun and a whole lot of laughs. No, that's wrong. Keep going.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London Podcast and on our websites, guideemily.com
and alexlacey.com and our dedicated podcast website, ladieswholondon.com. For more information about our upcoming walking tours and virtual tours, as well as what the Blue Badge Guiding Qualification is all about.
There we go.
I think that's it.
Oh my
Honestly.
God.
What I might do is I might put all those bloopers at the very end behind the jingle. For anybody who cares.
Oh, I know that. Oh, brilliant.
Oh yeah, I can do that. I'm an editing master, mate. Because I know that some people do listen for the bloopers.
Get them in.
Anyway. Hello, welcome back to Ladies Who London.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very well this week.
Despite the weather. I'm so done with this summer.
I know. We were meant to be getting a bit of a heat wave, but that seems to have sorted off somewhere.
Yeah, my housemate has been laughing at me because a couple of weeks ago when I heard there was going to be a heat wave, I bought a new kind of air cooling system.
Oh.
And she just comes home and she just goes, how's that going then?
Well, still in the box, is it?
Yeah, well, it's now out of the box, but it was the box for a week. Okay. I thought, I'm going to try and manifest the hot weather. But yeah, it's now sort of just parked where it's probably going to stay for a year.
Is it quite big as well? Taking up quite a lot of space?
Yeah, it's not small. It's not small.
Oh, God, that's
anyway,
annoying.
Whatever. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. I'm good. I had a nice weekend.
Good.
We went to Kew Gardens.
I'm desperate to go back to Kew Gardens. It's so wonderful.
God, I love it so much. And it was actually a really hot day on Saturday. And we went on the little train that takes you around the park.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. Just, I always forget how colourful it is in summer. I tend to go quite a lot at winter and autumn, but in the summer, it's just something else, isn't it?
It really is. And we haven't done a podcast. We've done a podcast on Chelsea Physic Garden, but not on
Kew. Haven't done on Kew. No. We should do that. We'll put that in the queue.
Well, so things are going pretty well podcast-wise. And we've got a couple of little things that we're working on that we can't quite tell you about yet, but...
Things in the pipeline.
And we should say, don't forget that the blog is up as well.
Guys, don't forget the blog.
Yeah, so we're updating the blog. So if you want to have a little look, all the things we're talking about after the podcast, it is there for you. And last week's one, which was on the Thames Tunnel, which was fantastic. So that's, really, really lovely little blog that you put up there. So do go and check those out because we're...
thanks.
You know, making sure that you've got everything you want to have a look at
exactly.
For them. So Thames Tunnel last week, I really enjoyed that one. That was really fun. It was so great to be on the boat as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've had a couple of people that have said that they've gone along the Thames since on, you know, one of the boats that go down towards the west, and suddenly thinking, oh, we're actually going over the tunnel, you know, and they've never thought that there's actually a tunnel or anything really under the Thames underneath them. So,
a few people get in touch and say, I've been through that so many times and I didn't know how historic it was. And then I spoke to somebody the other day on Instagram, I can't remember who it was now, apologies if it was you, who said that they went through it the other day and they were on their own and they felt like they had to tell somebody, so they told the person next to them.
Oh really? Oh, that's brilliant. Spread that history like
Absolutely.
Butter.
So we need to clear up our podcast pedestal from last week.
We do, my darling.
The two top crux points of the story. What did you go for?
So I went for the tunnel shield, which was patented by Mark Isambard Brunel, the creator. And it was this that really gnawed its way through the clay and the earth. And you can find a fantastic model of it in the Brunel Museum. So, yeah, I just thought that that model was key to creating the tunnel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's amazing when you think of all the technology we've got now, but the fact that back then they had none of that, and yet they still managed to create massive firsts that today, you know, we haven't moved on hugely in the way that they do it. We've just sort of made things a bit more sturdy, but essentially kind of the same thing, really.
Absolutely. And what did you go for, my love?
Well, I went for the rather daring escape by Isambard Kingsley Brunel, who got stuck in the tunnel when it flooded. And rather quick thinking, actually, instead of going the way that everyone else was going, took, I mean, frankly, a massive chance and went the other direction to where he knew there was a door, but it would be closed, and just sort of bashed on it until somebody came in and rescued him. So his escape attempt that we kept an engineer, you know, one of the best engineers the country's ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, thank God somebody was on the other side of the door to hear him banging to let him through, because otherwise, you know, things would be quite different. We wouldn't have the Clifton Suspension Bridge.
Yeah.
Renko Hospital in Crimea.
Yeah,
all of that. All sorts of things. Yeah.
Amazing. So there we go. So those are our options. It's slightly more split than sometimes this week. Not hugely. It's 41.5% to 58.5%.
Okay, that's not too bad.
Not too bad. I mean, that's a respectable showing.
It is.
For the one that came second.
And I think that's me. I feel
it was.
Do you know what? I'm fine with that, because I did think the tunnel shield.
It's an amazing bit of kit.
It's an amazing bit of kit.
But
it doesn't really
escape.
Wow the listeners, I don't think. So.
Well, it wowed 41.5% of them. So
that's true. And I don't want to disregard your vote at all. I'm not telling you voted the wrong way.
But
it sounds like I am, doesn't it? Oh, my God. Trying to dig my way out of this with the tunnel shield.
Very nice.
So, well done, Alex. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's now 22 to 21, I believe. Yeah, are we both on 22?
We'll need to check.
I think we're both on 22. Right. Either way, you are one ahead of me. So, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yes, it's 23 to 22.
23 to 22. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
Very,
you know, it's very tight, isn't it? We're good at choosing these.
And also, you know, if anyone out there, if you think that the crux point isn't any of the two choices, and you want to tell us, you know, what you think your crux point
is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we would very much like to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do drop us a line. We have an email and we're not afraid to use it.
No, we're not.
There we go. Now, I should also give a little shout out to Ben Damerel, who has been listening.
Hello, Ben.
He dropped us a message on our Instagram, Ladies Who London podcast on Instagram. And he said that he has just started listening and he's gone all the way back to the beginning and has listened to all of them. You are a sucker for punishment, Ben, tell you.
Honestly, when did that start? He's been listening to them every day.
I know. And he's now waiting for the new one. So that's this one. Hooray. So we thought we'd give you a little shout out. Say hi, Ben.
Hi, Ben.
Thanks for listening. And thank you for, frankly, flagellating yourself by going back and listening to the entire back
catalogue. That word again, Alex.
You like that, don't you?
Flagellating. That came up a couple of weeks ago, didn't it?
Did it?
I think so.
Maybe it's my word of the month.
Flagellating.
Whatever.
I haven't managed to get it into a sentence myself yet, but...
Okay. Well, self-flagellation, I suppose. Anyway, whatever. So, on with this week's podcast. Where are we this week?
Well, Alex, the wheel, it did land... crikey, where did it land?
It landed on Covent Garden.
Oh, it did, didn't it?
Now,
it
at this point, we should say, if you've bothered to read the title of this podcast, you might realise it is not the Bow Street police station, the Bow Street Runners this week, as it was supposed to be.
What?
Now, there's a reason for that. I know, sorry, did I not tell you? The reason for that is we were going to have a guest on this week, and it was going to be somebody related to the museum. That's just opened up. Sadly, she's not been able to join us last minute. So I've switched the topic this week, and we are going to come back to the Bow Street Runners in a few weeks' time.
Great.
When she's able to come back on and actually be a guest, because we were really excited about having her on. So we don't want to do it without her.
No.
Because she'll bring an amazing insight. So I've switched over to one of the other things that was on my list for Covent Garden. Now, this is, for those who listen to or watch Global Tea Break, which was the series that I did on Instagram during lockdown.
It was fantastic.
Thank you very much. This is a repeat topic, but it's one of my favourites. And this is an incredible woman with a really exciting story. And we're going to talk about Margot Fonteyn today.
Great.
So for those who've listened before, apologies, but I think you'll agree, it's an amazing story. So Margot Fonteyn, do you know who she is, what she does? Did you watch that episode of Global Tea Break? I'm testing you now.
This is really embarrassing. I didn't watch that episode.
Scandal.
So I'm literally sitting back eating popcorn and I'm about to enjoy Alex.
Fabulous. Well, Margot Fonteyn, now I'm going to preface this by saying, if you are not a fan of ballet, do not turn off, because she is a ballet dancer, but her story goes much, much beyond the ballet. Now, the reason I wanted to do something on the ballet is I am a massive ballet fan. When I did my top 100 things, experiences to do in London on the Global Tea Break, I think the Royal Ballet came in first or second or something. It is one of my favourite things to do. And Margot Fonteyn was the person who shaped the Royal Ballet. She performed in the classics. She was a muse for a choreographer. And she, you know, she really is the when you look at the ballet greats, if you sort of do a top 10 list, she's in there. She used to partner Rudolf Nureyev, who you may have heard of, who is just one of the all-time greats in ballet. But Margot Fonteyn goes on to have a very interesting story that involves political intrigue, a coup, and then a rather dramatic sort of comeback. So bear with us. If you don't like ballet,
not
don't
just
worry.
Your regular ballet dancer.
Well, you say that. There's a couple of ballet dancers who've gone a little bit political of late, but we're not going to talk about them. We're going to talk about Margot. So, fabulous name, Margot Fonteyn.
Margot Fonteyn, yes.
Just gorgeous. That's not her original name.
Oh.
Her original name, she was born Margaret Hookham.
So a little bit different.
Not quite as glamorous as Margot Fonteyn.
No, bring on Margaret Hookham to the stage. No, it doesn't have that kind of champagne ring to it, does it?
It really doesn't. Whereas Margot Fonteyn is just fabulous and, you know.
Dripping.
You say the champagne ring. I like that. I like that. Mm. She was known, her nickname was Peggy. So even more kind of down to earth and very.
All right, Pegs.
All right, Pegs. And she's
your Pegs, Peg.
I mean, I don't know what her accent was like. Have I ever heard her speak? I'm not sure. Anyway, maybe she did have an Emily Dell special.
Oh, yeah.
Your that posh accent of yours.
Oh, that one. Sorry. That one.
So she was known as Peggy. She was born in Surrey, and she started, you know, like so many dancers, they get onto it really young. She started dancing at 4.
Wow.
She went to ballet school in Ealing in West London, and age 4, she is already, you know, there. And she sort of said, the minute I saw the stage and I wanted to be on it. And you often find that with dancers and performers, that the minute they have that first sort of, they're awakened to that, they're like, what, this is me, this is it. So the whole thing kind of, her ballet life was a little bit uncertain when her father, he actually moved to Shanghai for work.
Oh.
So you can imagine immediately her little kind of ballet life at home. But she went to Shanghai. She learned ballet there as well under a famous guy at the time, a guy called George Goncharov. And it was really clear very, very early on that she had a huge talent for dance, like really absolutely natural. And when she came back to London, she started training at the Sadler's Wells Ballet School. Have you ever been to Sadler's Wells?
I have. I've seen a couple of productions there. The last thing I saw was The Snowman at Christmas.
Lovely. Oh, yeah, they often do that.
Oh, it was beautiful. Dancing around the stage and flying high. Oh, it's fantastic.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I was at the Sadler's Wells just the other night. For those who follow me on Instagram, I put up some stories about it. I went up for Singing in the Rain, which was, let me tell you, out of this world. It's my favourite film anyway. It was incredible. Adam Cooper dancing in the lead, just amazing.
Did they have any kind of speckles of water or...?
They didn't just have speckles. They had litres.
Seriously?
Yeah. They did a proper, you know, literally downpour. Dancing in the rain. And it was, you know, it was deep in water and he was clapping it all out into the audience. It was fantastic. It was amazing.
Brilliant.
Do you know, actually, when I moved to London, which would be nearly 20 years ago now, I was such a mad ballet fan when I was a kid, and I'd watched there was a TV show or I think a film possibly called The Ballet Shoes, and I would watch it obsessively. And when I moved to London, the only thing I wanted to do for definite was go to the Sadler's Wells Ballet.
Oh, bless you.
And I think within my first week of being in London, I'd been to Sadler's Wells, and that was it. I was in London then. It was the one thing I wanted to do. Wow. What a nerd. Anyway.
Did you cry when you were in there?
I honestly don't remember. I don't remember what I saw. I just remember being so excited about being in Sadler's Wells.
Wow. Yeah. Do you own any ballet shoes?
Do I, heck no.
Just as an observer, you love it. You're not.
Yes. No, I don't. I'm not. I do other dance, but I don't do ballet. I did when I was a kid. Anyway, I digress. Now, she started training at the Sadler's Wells Ballet School, and she then debuted with a school that was called the Vic Wells Ballet School. And she was only 15 when she debuted, so really quite, you know, you can see this talent, this innate talent is coming out really early. So what is the Vic Wells? Have you heard of the Vic Wells Ballet School?
It's not connected to the old Vic, is it?
It absolutely is.
Oh,
yeah.
It is. Oh, they started as a ballet school.
Well, no, the old Vic was already in, it was already there. The Vic Wells Ballet School was started kind of as a co-production. There was a lady called Ninette de Valois. If you go to the Royal Opera House today and you're out the side with the floral hall, you can see this incredible building. Mm. We'll put some photos on the blog of this. Right in front of it, there is a statue of a dancer sitting down and tying her shoe right by those red phone boxes.
Yes, yes.
That is Ninette de Valois.
Okay.
Now, Ninette de Valois is one of the four really big names attached to the Royal Ballet. She was a ballet dancer in her own right. She had danced with the Ballet Russe, which was a very, very famous ballet school, with Serge Diaghilev. And Diaghilev is often seen as kind of the forefather of ballet. And then she founded her own dance school to give her dancers kind of professional experience. And she approached a lady whose name you probably know called Lillian Bayliss. Have you heard that name before?
Oh, yes. It's a shop as well, isn't it?
Well, there are places all over London, especially concert halls and things called the Bayliss Theatre or the Lillian Bayliss Auditorium and things like that. She was already doing opera and Shakespeare at the Old Vic. So the Old Vic was hers. She owned it. And Lillian basically said to her, yeah, sure, let's do something together. And this relationship created what was known as the Vic Wells Ballet. So the Old Vic and the Sadler's Wells kind of came together. And this relationship lasted until Lillian died in 1937. So it was, you know, this is quite a big deal. Lillian's a very big deal in theatre, and up comes Ninette de Valois, who's been this very famous, very popular dancer, and they create this school. And this is where Margaret Hookham or Margot Fonteyn goes to study, to dance with them. One of the things that Lillian had wanted to do was to reopen Sadler's Wells Theatre, and the Old Vic, you know, was doing really well. It was full every night, and she wanted to increase that programme across these two theatres. And Sadler's Wells was up for sale. The theatre had sort of fallen into disrepair, and it was up for sale as the site of a factory. And Lillian managed to raise the money to buy the site, demolish it, and then rebuild it. And that became the Vic Wells. So, you know, quite impressive. Now, one thing that Ninette de Valois did is she brought in a load of famous dancers from the Ballet Russe that she'd danced with into the Vic Wells Ballet. One of these was a lady called Alicia Markova. Now, Alicia Markova, again, is in those 10 of the top dancers ever. But as Margot Fonteyn is coming in, shortly after, this is where Alicia Markova leaves. So there is a space.
Oh, hello.
And Margot starts to inherit these very famous, very classical roles that Alicia Markova has been really famous for.
And how old is Margot at this point?
She's only 15. Only 15 when she debuts, and it's shortly after. So, I mean, she might have been 17 or so. I don't know exactly the age she started inheriting these big roles. But, yeah, I mean, young. And, of course, ballet dancers are young. But that is particularly young then.
Gosh, it is, isn't it? And I guess, you know, there probably wasn't a day that went past where she wasn't training. It was probably very rigorous.
Oh, absolutely. And it still is today. I mean, if you, you know, if you talk to dancers, there's a dancer that's rather sort of high profile at the Royal Ballet, who's just left in the middle of her incredible career to go and study at university in America.
Oh, because she missed that opportunity when she was of that age.
She's still only in her 20s, I think.
Oh, she's still only...
She's incredible, but she's very aware that, you know, the dancing takes everything. You don't have space for anything else. So it's definitely a lifestyle choice.
And I guess you've only got a certain amount of years to be a ballet dancer.
I mean, it varies depending on whether you're lucky with injuries or not and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, same as sports stars. I mean, these guys are, I'd say, often a lot fitter than sports stars. And what they're doing is just stamina and strength and just incredible. So yeah, you know, like any kind of athletic endeavor, your younger years are your prime ones.
Yeah. And the toes as well. I imagine you know, there's only a certain amount of years where standing on the tip of your toe is it, you know, I don't know how they do it.
I know. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. And if you ever go to the ballet and you see, especially Swan Lake is a great example for that. When you see the swans all on point and they're just all, they're sort of flying. They're made to look like they're sort of flying and fluttering across the lake. And it is just, it's a thing of beauty. If you've never seen it, even if you're not into ballet, pop it into Google and have a little look, because seeing that is, you know, is outstanding. One of the roles that, so there's a very famous ballet called Giselle, and that's one of the roles that Margot took on. But also Sleeping Beauty, the title role of Aurora, hers, Margot Fonteyn's, is considered the kind of definitive version.
Wow.
You know, she's amazing. Mm. And she becomes a muse for a choreographer and all this sort of thing. Now, when it gets to... Oh, actually, and I should mention, there's a very famous version, because you get different versions of stories, like Romeo and Juliet, for example. And one choreographer decided that he was going to centre his Romeo and Juliet around her. So she, you know, he literally choreographed it for her. Amazing.
Gosh, I mean, she must have been pretty incredible for them to completely adapt it around her. Wow. Yeah,
absolutely.
Are there videos that you can find?
Oh, definitely. Yes, absolutely. Okay. And she is stunning, especially when she's dancing with Rudolf Nureyev, who we're going to get onto later.
Okay.
Now, we get to World War II. And you can imagine that World War II is not great for... Well, we know in London that theatres mostly carried on. Yeah, there was a period of time when the theatres shut, but mostly they were open. But this was potentially a disaster for the Royal Ballet, and it was decided to keep the theatre open for morale. You know, a lot of this thing of... We've all seen the movies, haven't we, of the young soldiers coming to London and going to the theatre and all that kind of thing. Mm. And that was one thing that the ballet was kept open for as well. But... This is when you think about this, you kind of go, how was this allowed to happen? How did this become a thing? It was decided that in spring of 1940, so already the start of the Second World War, they went on a tour of the Netherlands, Belgium, and France.
What?
Right? I know. It just, you think, wait, what?
Were they, I mean, you can imagine the manager kind of sitting them down and saying, hey guys, we're about to go on tour.
Guess where we're going? How do you feel about like, front line?
be like, really? Yes. It's all right. We're going to give you some hard hats. We've painted them pink and white to go with your ballet gear.
Well, you joke, but it really was very close. Really close. So on the 6th of May, they played, they did a show in The Hague. And 4 days later, The Hague was invaded by the Nazis. Yeah. And guess where the company were? They were still in The Hague.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And they hid in the hotel, I think in the basement of their hotel, for 3 days. And then they were smuggled out. And they were smuggled into the hold of a cargo ship. And then came back. And apparently, you know, they were being sort of bombed all the way back. And later,
that's got to be terrifying, hasn't it? You know,
unbelievable.
Why had they planned? Well, got that gig. I guess there wasn't that many gigs around because, as you say, you know, a few theatres were starting to close.
Yeah, I don't know why they did it, but one of the reasons possibly. So the Foreign Office, they were asked about it, and they said, "Look, you obviously knew that the Nazis were nearing and that they were there and blah, blah, blah." Mm. And the Foreign Office admitted that they were aware of the invasion plans, but they didn't want to cancel because they feared that they were going to reveal the military intelligence that had been given to them about the Nazi advance.
Oh, so if they declined, then people would say, well, why? What do you know?
Exactly.
What do you think's happening out there?
Well, then they're going to know that they've got information coming in from somewhere, and they're going to go and find where that leak is.
So why were they given that information? Why didn't others know that it was going to?
You're asking me about war strategy now. I wasn't around at the time, and I definitely wasn't part of the Foreign Office.
Right. No.
So I don't know, to be honest. But
oh wow! So they must have been.
Well, it's like any wartime, isn't it? You're always given intelligence on what the other side is doing.
Yes.
And realistically, they're not going to be able to do much about the advance into The Hague. So what are you going to do?
You're going to put your ballet shoes on and get yourself over there. Get that tutu on, girl. Come on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
Now, rather sensibly, the company then stayed in the UK. They didn't go out of the UK for the rest of the war, but they went on tours around the country.
Okay.
And, you know, this is kind of tough because, of course, we're talking about wartime. We're talking about rationing, both food, clothing, all of that kind of stuff. And normally a dancer would get through, I don't know, two to three pairs of pointe shoes in one full ballet. If you had a, you know, major role, then you'd be getting through, because pointe shoes, the ones with the, you know, the big blocks at the top that you go on on your toes in, they take a lot of wear and tear. And these dancers were wearing one pair of shoes for 18 performances. Ah, so you can imagine that
their little bit of wood.
Just, yeah.
God, I bet it was just like a tiny little stub, like as big as a sharpener.
And, you know, their feet. Well, it would have been the feet that would have taken the toll more than the actual shoes, I think, but still.
Oof.
Yeah. And there's one lady who was a dancer in that company at the time, a lady called Beryl Gray. And she remembers a bomb exploding overhead right in the middle of the performance. And they just kept on dancing.
Kept on going like absolute troopers.
Absolute troopers. Absolute
wow. Troopers. But you know what? A lovely thing to watch while something so harrowing is happening. Because you know, it really does. I can imagine, you know, being in that situation just make you forget about things just for a split second while you're watching somebody do some kind of amazing leap through the air.
Absolutely. Mm. And ballet did become incredibly popular because of this. You know, like you say, it was an outlet. It was an escapism bit. But it was also, they were going on tour around the country and they were open in London. So it was a way of people to go and see something, frankly, absolutely fabulous in, like you say, a pretty grey and grisly and rather depressing time.
Mm. And I presume maybe it would have been a little bit expensive for people to watch the ballet. So maybe at this time they were kind of reducing their prices and letting more people see it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about prices. I think this is something that is often thought that ballet is very expensive. And I find that it's often no more expensive than any other theatre in London, which of course if you are privileged enough to be able to afford the income where you can go to the theatre, you can easily get tickets. I mean, I used to go when I was a poor struggling, you know, early 20 something in London, and I would go to the Royal Ballet, and there were really cheap seats right up at the top, and they cost me like £10, and you know, it wasn't the best view, but it was still amazing. And you know, it is it doesn't have to cost hundreds of pounds, is what I'm saying. I don't know what the prices would have been back then, but obviously, you know, you're going to make it accessible for as many people as possible.
Yeah.
So this, you know, this shoots Margot even higher in the fame, and she is just this huge ballet icon, and she goes on worldwide tours with the company after the Second World War, of course. She goes to the USA, and she goes on a show called the Ed Sullivan Show, which at the time was, you know, your Jimmy Fallon, your James Corden of the day.
Yeah.
And one of the things she did is by her sort of, she had a really lovely, gentle nature. She was really sweet. In fact, I was chatting to somebody a little while ago. I can't remember who it was now. But they said that they had met her. They'd been on tour as a, I think, so, a backstagey type person or something to do with the production with Margot Fonteyn.
Wow.
And they all went to dinner one night and she... this lady didn't really know anybody there, so she kind of came in late and Margot was like, come over here, and there was a seat next to her, and she sat her next to her, and then they became really good friends throughout the rest of the touring production.
Oh, what a sweetie pie,
you know, because when you get these big stars for theatre and that kind of thing, they can be diva-ish. And this lady, I can't remember who, if it was you and you're out there listening, please remind me and remind me of the details, because I've probably got them all wrong.
Definitely wasn't me.
But yeah, she said she was just adorable, and from that point on, every dinner she'd sort of save a spot for her and have a nice chat and things like that. And she was apparently very kind of reserved and quiet and just really gracious and lovely. So nice. She went on this show in the US, and that she was so delightful and everyone loved her, that this started this kind of interest in classical dance at that point as well.
Now, I'm just going to say, I've just put a photo of her in my... well, just got a photo up of her on my phone. She's absolutely beautiful.
She is, isn't she? She's very delicate.
Yes, very delicate. Yeah. Gorgeous smile. We'll put a picture up, definitely, on Instagram. Wow.
Now, this is where it starts to get quite interesting in a non-ballet way.
Oh.
So, in 1956, the Royal Ballet gets its charter. So it becomes the Royal Ballet, I suppose, just like the ballet. No, it was the Sadler's Wells Ballet before, and then it becomes the Royal Ballet. And in that same year, she gets the damehood. So she becomes Dame Margot Fonteyn. And the year before, she had married a chap called Roberto Arias, who was known as Tito. That was his nickname. And he used to be the ambassador for Panama to the UK. And he was a diplomat and a politician, a little bit of a playboy as well.
Oh, hello.
Oh, yes. And he was in a Panamanian family that was a little bit like some of the kind of American dynasty families. So a sort of a Roosevelt or, one of those families that has lots of kind of people in different positions of power. His family was a little bit, they liked to plot against things as well. And this is where it gets a little bit excited. So she becomes a freelance dancer. She leaves the Royal Ballet. She becomes freelance. She still guests with them, but it means that she's got, you know, she's not employed by them anymore. She can kind of do what she wants, and she can guest around the world with different people as well.
Great.
And she spends a lot of time in Panama with her new husband. And in 1959, she is arrested in Panama.
What the hell does she do?
Well, her husband had attempted a coup on the government. There is talk that it might have been with the help of Fidel Castro. And she had tried to kind of be a decoy for her husband, as he'd been trying to bring in arms into the country for this coup. He had sort of, it had all fallen apart and he had escaped. And so she acted as a decoy for him so he could escape.
Wow.
And of course, this means that she's complicit in this coup. And so she's arrested there. She was then deported to New York, and her husband had managed to escape, and they didn't see each other for a little while, but they ended up being reunited in Brazil. And she was dancing again by November of that year.
Oh, wow. I was going to say, is this because she was well known and people just, you know, kind of...
I don't know the ins and outs as to how
she was
deported. So I guess if they deport you, then it's kind of like, we're getting rid of you rather than
you can do what you want, but you're not allowed to step foot here, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now at this point, so she was born in, I don't know if I told you when she was born, 1919. So Ooh. This is 1959.
Okay.
So she is 40. Okay. Right. And a couple of years later, she's in her early 40s. It's 1962, and she's thinking about retirement. Now, for a ballet dancer, to be in your early 40s and still be dancing is incredibly impressive.
Mm.
I mean, that rarely, rarely happens. Mm. So she's about 42 at this point, and she's thinking, I might pack it in soon. I might pack it in. And then in comes somebody who's going to change all of that. Rudolf Nureyev steps into the scene. Now, Rudolf Nureyev is, I mean... when we're talking dancers, he is just one of the most incredible dancers you will ever see. He had just defected from Russia. There was a film a couple of years ago. I think it was called White Crow. Okay. That was his nickname, White Crow. I think it was called that. And it was about him defecting from Russia. He used to be the star of what was the Kirov Ballet, which is now called the Mariinsky. And he came over on a tour and defected, which is a massive, massive deal. He is about 20 years younger than her. He's 23. And they sort of went to Margot, how about dancing, having Rudolph as your partner? And they were instantly just incredible, spellbinding. Whenever you talk about Margot Fonteyn, you talk about Rudolph Nureyev in the same breath. And these two, I mean, it would have been incredible to see them. I wish I had.
Oh my God.
Performed Giselle together, which she'd performed before. And apparently, at the end of that performance, they had 15 minutes of applause and 20 curtain calls.
Whoa.
I know.
Gosh. And I've got a picture up of him as well. And hashtag hottie.
Oh, he is a very beautiful
Woman. Cheekbones. I bet she didn't turn him down. I bet she was like, yeah, all right, I'll give Rudolph a go.
Well, he wasn't on her bus, but never mind.
Oh, okay.
He was on a bus going a different direction.
Oh, well.
Can't have them all. Now, this is where, so she decides actually not to quit, and she kind of, you know, she dances with Rudolph Nureyev, and they go on tour together. And in 1964, they're on tour, and Margot receives the news that her husband has been shot. Oh, yeah. So she leaves the tour immediately. She goes to Panama, and she finds out that he's been shot 4 times.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's been paralyzed. He's now a quadriplegic.
Whoa.
Yeah. So at this point, she is like, well, I now can't afford to retire. I have to bring in income.
I have to keep
for
going.
His medical bills.
Oh, my God. Yeah. When she got that phone call to say that he'd been shot, did they know that he was going to survive at that point, I wonder? I don't know.
Mm. Possibly not.
To survive being shot 4 times. Mm-hmm. Wow.
But yeah, completely paralyzed.
So she just had to keep on going.
She had to keep on going. And one thing she did is she brought him over to the UK for treatment while she could carry on dancing. Mm. Where do you imagine she brought him? Where is going to be the place to bring spinal injuries in the 1960s, very famous?
Have we spoke about this hospital before?
We have not.
Oh.
It's where the Paralympics started.
Oh.
In the Stoke Mandeville Spinal Hospital.
Oh, okay.
Which is where, they started the Paralympics years ago.
Wow.
To give, you know, the people who were recovering from spinal injuries sport and things to do. So very, very world famous. And do you remember at the 2012 Olympics, I think the mascot for the Paralympics was called Mandeville, I think.
Oh.
Random facts. Anyway.
Okay.
And Nureyev, you know, so she carried on dancing, and Nureyev just thought she was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And he said, you know, when she goes off the stage at the end of Swan Lake in her, you know, huge white tutu covered in feathers, he says, I would have followed her to the end of the world.
Oh,
they had a very, very close relationship. Very close. They trusted each other.
Yeah.
Amazingly. And the two of them, I mean, I say they trusted each other. They did a lot of japes together. They both got arrested in San Francisco in 1967. They were at this massive party in Haight's Ashbury. If you know San Francisco, that's very much the kind of sort of hippie kind of area of San Francisco, and they were both arrested for smoking pot.
She's a bit of a devil, really, isn't
she? Isn't she fantastic?
Love her.
And the two of them danced together for 15 years until she was well into her 50s. So, I mean, for a dancer, this is just unbelievable.
And how old is he at this point? She's 50, how old is Rudolph?
He was about 20 years younger, so he would have been, when she turns 50, he'll be about 30, 31.
Wow. Yeah. And as you say, you know, you need so much trust. I'm not surprised they really did, because the amount of throws you're doing, especially if she's of that age.
I mean, just incredible. Incredible. Mm. She retired from full-time dance in 1972.
Whoa.
Yeah. So late 50s. And
then, 1972. So and she that started was, that, when she was four. God. Yeah.
And so that's from full-time dance. She still carried on dancing ad hoc, and then she retired completely in 1979. So she would have been 60. 60 when she finally fully retired from dance.
Mm.
I mean, that is a lifetime, isn't it?
And that must have been so emotional.
Oh.
I mean, when you decide to finally give up your hobby or passion, that must be
just your life, yeah.
Yeah.
What so she went to, she moved to Panama to be with her husband. fairly obviously. And then she lived on a cattle farm. And that's, you know, that's what they did. She reared cattle. And she and Nuriev, they kept a really close relationship, and they would speak several times a week. And she said to him, I've developed this love of cattle farming. Mm. And so they had this big sort of ranch, really, and you know, cattle everywhere. Now, in 1989, her husband was about to die. So, you know, he'd been paralyzed for 25 years by this point.
Wow.
You know, she's been caring for him full time. Margot developed ovarian cancer as well. Now,
no.
She was very, very private. She did not tell many people at all. I mean, literally a handful of people. And she was traveling back and forth to America, to Houston, for her treatment. She had gone through all of her money. She'd exhausted everything. So, you know, her husband's medical bills are high. Now her medical bills are high. And Nuriev stepped into the breach, and he helped her out financially, and he traveled to see her loads as well.
Mm.
And they were really, you know, they remained really close. And then the BBC did a documentary on her. They were like, we haven't heard from her in a while. What's going on? You know, what's happened with this sort of big, you know, coup that happened, and then her husband, and they're still, you know, the family was still very, very in the kind of political sphere.
Mm.
And they did this documentary, and they included, now, she, like I say, she was very private, and they included Nuriev talking about the bond that they shared, but also the extent of her financial worries sort of revealed themselves in the course of this documentary. And she's basically living in poverty by this point in Panama. Her husband has died now, and she is just sort of living there, just subsisting, really. Very, very, you know, really quite sad. And so this documentary created massive waves, and a gala was organised for her. Nuriev danced in it.
Mm-hmm.
The famous opera singer Placido Domingo also sang in it. And Princess Diana was there as well.
Wow.
And they raised £250,000 for her care.
God, that's incredible.
Absolutely incredible. And this is in the, you know, the 80s. So obviously the would have been a lot more now. And she travelled over for it. She came onto stage. She was still incredibly delicate, like this little bird. And just, you know, amazing to have her on the stage there. She died 2 years later at the age of 71 in 1991. And she died on the 29th anniversary of her premiere of Dancing with Nuriev.
Oh, gosh.
In Giselle, wow. Which was just, I mean, amazing. Wow. And she was then buried with her husband in Panama. And so this woman, I mean, her name still, you know, reverberates in the halls of the Royal Opera House and any ballet company around the world, of Margot Fonteyn, just this amazing woman.
Mm.
And there is a plaque to her in Westminster Abbey. Did you know about this?
Oh, whereabouts is it?
So it's in Poets' Corner. There's a little plaque. It's very tiny, and it actually is not just to her. It's to the founders of the Royal Ballet. So it's got Ninette de Valois. It's got Frederick Ashton. It's got Margot Fonteyn and somebody, Constance Lambert, who was the musical director.
Oh, it rings a bell. Is it on the ground, or is it a dedication on the wall?
It's on the ground, and it's as you're sort of leaving Poets' Corner to go back towards the middle of the Abbey and the exit. It's right there. It's a little triangle.
I think I have seen it. Oh, lovely.
Yeah, amazing. So that is Margot Fonteyn. I mean, who would have thought that this, you know, Peggy from Surrey would go on to be a world-class ballet dancer and involved in a coup in Panama.
Wow. And, you know, when she got that message to say, oh, we're having a gala for you, number one, to try and raise some money, and then suddenly realising that amount had been raised for her, you just...
I think they had to convince her to come over as well, because you know, she was so modest and so sort of unassuming,
which is probably why people loved her even more and wanted to put the money in, because they knew that she, you know, the fact that she had hidden the fact that she was so much in debt and struggling, because she didn't want to worry anyone or kind of ask for help, I guess. What a lovely lady, with a little bit of a
feisty
kind of a rebel side as well. Feisty edge.
They're my favorite type, the rebel ladies.
Yes, especially knowing that she'd be dancing in this kind of white tutu and, you know, kind of quite unassuming. And then
she is smoking pot around the corner with Nuriev and
getting arrested a couple of times.
I mean, just, it's fantastic, isn't it? You would never, you sort of wouldn't think this quiet, unassuming lady would be up for starting a military coup in Panama.
Wow.
So there
oh,
we go.
Fantastic. Oh, I'm so going to have a little look at her dancing.
Yeah. I'll try and put them, if I can, try and embed a YouTube link into the blog as well.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Get your tech head on.
Absolutely. But yeah, so that's
wow,
that's
there she is, Margot.
I hope it wasn't too ballet heavy for people who are not into ballet. But to be honest...
Oh, no, I think that story had a bit of everything, to be honest, Alex. Wow, love that name as well.
Margot, yeah. With a T
Margot.
As well.
Mm.
Yes, it always reminds me of... I used to read the books of Gerald Durrell, who wrote all about animals, and he was a collector. And his sister was called Margot. And I always remember thinking, that's a gorgeous name.
Mm, really is. It's lovely to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
Margot.
It's a little bit French.
Yeah, it kind of just, it lingers in your mouth for a little bit.
I think I've got a bit of a crush. I think you have.
Alex, that was wonderful. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Podcast Pedestal. So what do you think for your podcast pedestal?
Proxy. Well, there's quite a few things, isn't there? I think I know what I want to go for. It's kind of an obvious one, really.
I bet I know. Go on, go for it.
Well, I kind of want to go for the gala.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think it says so much about how many people respected her.
Yeah.
And even, you know, it was obviously a few years after, because when the BBC created the programme, it would take a little while for them to do so and then to air, and it had been a little while since she danced and her name out there, plus she had a few kind of bruises to her name, bruises that some people might have thought was bruises, yet so many people wanted to help her.
Yeah.
So I think I'm gonna go for the gala.
Good choice. And as well, you know, put into that the fact that people are donating because they saw her dance during the Second World War and she lifted... Why am I helping you? I don't know.
Gala!
Gala.
Great choice.
Well, I'm going to go quite classic on this one, and I am going to go Nureyev's arrival. It's as simple as that. I can't not.
That is a good one. I'm surprised we haven't gone for her feet, but that is a good one.
I mean, Nureyev arriving is the bit where you think she's like, oh, I'm gonna give it all up. And then he arrives and there's just this spark, and they create one of the most incredible dancing partnerships ever. But not only that, it gives her the ability to carry on earning once her husband has been shot. Because if he hadn't arrived and she had given up, then where would she be? You know, it would have been much, much worse.
Yeah, that's true. Completely different pathway.
So there we go. Those are your options this week, everyone.
There we go. Lovely.
It's either the gala for fundraising or it is the arrival of Nureyev.
Excellent.
There we go.
Oh, thank you very much, Alex.
Fantastic. So before we get onto the wheel, have you got anything that you want to talk about coming up?
Anything you want to plug? Not just yet. There's a couple of things in the pipeline I've got for October.
Lovely.
But not just yet.
Okay.
No. What about you?
Well, I've got a tour coming. All my public tours are still on the website. This Sunday at 11 o'clock, I'm running my Black Londoners tour, which is all about people of colour in London who have... you know, been instrumental in the city and history, which is one of my favourite tours. But I know that a lot of people really enjoyed Kitty Fisher from a couple of weeks ago. So I'm also going to give a shout out to my tour, which is the following Sunday, the 29th, which is my Harlots and Boards walk.
Harlots,
we love it.
Harlots.
Round Covent Garden and Soho. And it talks about the Georgian sex industry. It talks about the inspiration for some of the people in the Harlots TV show. You don't have to have seen it. But, you know, if you have, then that's always kind of fun. And the book that everybody used to, all of the harlots of the area used to be listed in. It's one of my favourite tours. So that is on the 29th of August at 11 a.m. And they're all £15 per person. And you can book on my website. Simple.
Wonderful. Lovely, Alex. I'd like to do a little mini shout out to Carmen, who has been quiet throughout this whole entire recording.
Yeah, she's sleeping on your shoulder.
We didn't think we were going to be able to do it, but she is just... I think she's all right about that.
She, from this angle, she looks fine.
Yeah, she looks all right, doesn't she?
Yeah, she looks all right. Yes. Well done, Carmen.
Well done, Carmi. The Wheel of Destiny. So the wheel.
Yes. Yes. Back to the big one this week.
Back to the big one. Back to the big one.
What are you thinking? Are you thinking people, place, event?
There are a few people that I want to do. All right. Do have a bit of a list of people. Okay. One who I'm really excited about, but I don't know where. We haven't got it on the wheel, the place name, so I kind of have to think where this person is linked to. But okay. I'll think about that for another time. Right.
Give it a spin then.
Okay, give it a spin. Here we go. Oh my gosh, I've completely forgot about this area. I don't think he's ever landed here. Oh. It's bank/city.
Ah, okay. Mm. Ooh, interesting.
Oh God, you've got so much there. It's more kind of institutions. I mean, obviously you do have people, but talk about Mansion House. You've got the Royal Exchange, the bank
quite
itself.
A lot of good stuff around there.
Ooh, actually, I know. Have you heard of the Beefsteak Club?
No.
Ooh, okay. Maybe I might talk about that then. Yeah, it's a club that was formed in the 18th century and it's got quite a few big names I'm sure you would have heard of.
And all right.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
I'm up for that.
The Beefsteak Club.
The Beefsteak Club. Brilliant.
Excellent.
Brilliant. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. I don't know anything about it. Okay. Sounds delicious.
Get me some peppercorn sauce.
Absolutely. So there we go. That's it for this week. Thank you all so much for coming. Lovely to see you, Em.
Yeah, thank lovely you to see you quiet, too, my calm. Love. Yeah, thank you, Calm. Yeah, that was brilliant, Alex. Thank you so much. And thank you to all of you for listening.
Absolutely. Don't forget the blog is there if you want to go and have a look at some of the supporting stuff to go and see things. And like we say, get in touch. If you'd like to get in touch, you can do that via email, ladieswholondon@gmail.com, or you can pop a note through the contact page on the website or on Instagram. And let us know your thoughts, and please do keep reviewing us. We've had a couple of 1 and 2 star reviews now, which we're not happy about, but we haven't looked at them. So if you want to go and give us a 5-star review, we'd be delighted with that.
Yes, please.
And we will see you next week.
Fantastic. Ooh,
exciting. See you then, everyone.
Bye, guys. Bye. We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London Podcast and on our are you butting in?
Sorry.
You've never done that before.
Do that again.
Seriously? What is wrong with us?
Right, do that last bit again. I'm gonna edit that in.
You can be found We can be found on Instagram at Ladies.
Do it properly because I was giggling over the top.
Oh, okay.
Well,
what's the next bit? Something about
or information. For more information about us and what the Blue Badge Guiding Qualification is all about.
Yeah.
I think. Oh, upcoming tours.
Upcoming tours.
But information about our upcoming tours.
This is the worst one ever.
This is the worst one ever. For more information about our upcoming tours. No!
Bloody hell.